Today's show is sponsored by Okta. In these challenging times, we're all looking for simplicity, something that just works. The last thing you want to do is spend time building authentication for your new curbside pickup app. Because if you're spending time building your own authentication systems, it's time spent not making your customers happy. This is where Okta makes it simple. Okta's cloud-based authentication services are easy to set up, and they already integrate with the tools and applications you use today. Okta is trusted by companies like HPE, Splunk, CarMax, GitLab, and Cengage, plus many, many more. To take the hassle out of your authentication needs, visit okta.com/cloud and learn how to get started today. That's okta.com/cloud.
Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to The Cloudcast. We are coming to you from the massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. Aaron, this is the last show of the year and also typically the biggest show of the year. How did you survive 2020?
Yeah, talk about an interesting year, right? And I'm sure everyone probably has that exact same answer as well. And we'll be talking about it as we kind of go through some of the topics here, right? But I mean, new way to work this year, new way of conferences or lack of conferences. I mean, it's just been a completely crazy year. And looking forward to 2021.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, listen, typically in our opening segment, we typically do cloud news of the week. We are going to, this show, as those of you that have been with us for more than this year, this show is sort of our review of the year, the big trends of the year. We kind of go through them and then we do some predictions for 2021. Usually in this segment, we're doing cloud news of the week. We're going to kind of walk through sort of what we call Cloudcast Business, kind of the review of the numbers for the year and just some highlights and stuff. And then after the break, we will really dive into that. So let's talk a little bit about kind of where the show went. So I think the first thing we've got to do is thank everybody for sticking with the show, for listening. We had just right around 1.5 million listens for the year. So right about the same as last year, which, you know, given that everybody had different commutes and different schedules and different everything, big thank you to everybody for sticking with the show, for staying with us, for continuing to tell a friend. And big thank you first and foremost from us to all of you.
Yeah, and I'll add this real quick too. Again, I don't know about you personally, but for me, I mean, I used to listen while traveling, or I used to listen, while over here at the gym or doing some of these other things. And you almost had to develop entire new listening patterns in addition to our regular schedules, being impacted pretty severely this year as well.
Yeah, and this was, and this was the year that, you got into a politics podcast or you got into a celebrity podcast. I mean, there was a million new ones started and, obviously people's minds were on things far from tech throughout the year. There was lots going on. So, it was, for everybody, we saw the numbers dip a little bit in March. We really weren't sure what that was going to mean. We've seen a lot of it come back. So thank you to everybody who found us again. And, like we said, we're excited about 2021 and getting back to some sort of normalcy.
Absolutely. Hey, Brian, how about sponsors
this year? We had an awesome set of sponsors this year. We've, one of the things that we love to do on the show is not only, bring you a show every week and have it at high audio quality, but we're lucky to have sponsors. And part of it is, we love to kind of expose our audience to new companies and companies that are, looking for help in getting the word out. So big thank you to kind of a very, very long list of sponsors this year. Datadog, MongoDB, UpCloud, DiviCloud, StrongDM, Logs.io, Taos, Studio 3T, Cloud Academy, BMC, Fauna, and Okta. So huge thank you to all of them. They help us make the show, make sure we get it out every single week. They sort of hold us accountable. So big thank you to them, throughout the year. And we've got some really awesome sponsors lined up for 2021 as well. So, thank you for them for helping us make the show, what it is and continue to grow.
Absolutely.
One of the things that we
talk about acquisitions.
Dive into that because everybody is, we always talk about, we're lucky to get early guests on the show. And a lot of times those companies get big and either go IPO or get acquired. So who were some of those companies this year that got acquired?
Yeah, we had 8 this year. And it's pretty comparable to last year. I think we had maybe 9 last year, if I remember correctly. Right. But 8 this year, ThousandEyes by Cisco, Cumulus by NVIDIA, SwiftStack by NVIDIA, SaltStack by VMware, DiviCloud by Rapid7, Big Switch, Arista, Rancher going to SUSE, and Kasten going to Veeam as the last one.
Yeah, so congratulations to all those companies, both the acquirers and the acquirees. I think we're up to around, I'd have to look at the exact number, but I think we're up to 57 acquisitions. So, you know, we've done about 490 shows. We've had about, you know, up to 12-13% of our companies have gotten acquired. You know, we've had, we're closing in on about $5 billion in VC funding and about almost $65 billion in sort of acquisitions and sort of post closing. So, we've been lucky, fortunate to have a lot of really smart people on the show. And I think we've done a really decent job of kind of picking some interesting winner companies, if you will.
Yep.
One piece of bad news, and we'll sort of wrap this up before we get into all the trends after the break. For those of you that have been with the show for a while, you know, at least more than a year, you know, right around this time of the year, we typically make our annual request to you. We typically don't ask much from our audience other than to listen and tell a friend. But typically around this time of the year, we ask for you to be generous. And we've always worked really closely with the Krispy Kreme Challenge, the folks who, you know, help out the North Carolina Children's Hospital. Unfortunately, this year, that race is not going to happen. So I know a lot of you enjoy, you know, not only being generous and helping out the hospital, but watching the two of us just be complete idiots and, you know, try and run 5 miles and eat a dozen donuts halfway between. Unfortunately, that race, like a lot of in-person things, is canceled in 2021. So we, you know, Aaron and I will be making a donation because it's something we care a lot about. But, you know, we're going to have to figure out a new way for the community to get together. Aaron, thoughts on the Krispy Kreme?
Well, I mean, you know, we've been doing it a long time, and I admit that the timing of the thing just stinks to, you know, running in February because sometimes it's pretty bad weather.
Yeah.
But, but I really am going to miss doing it this year. And they do have a virtual experience, but it's just not the same, right? And for those of you that kind of follow me out there, I tend to, you know, do some of the long distance endurance kind of events. And I mean, there hasn't been any races, you know, all of this year, and there's no races probably for at least the first half of next year as well. So it's a shame because the environment is fun, you know, seeing all the people in the costumes is fun. And it's a great race. It's a great cause. And we really enjoy being a part of it. So we certainly hope it is a, you know, just a 1 year hiatus and we'll be back at it in 2022.
Yep. And hopefully, you know, for all of you, I know it's been a tough year. I know, you know, the tech industry hasn't been as impacted as a lot, but hopefully you're able to reach out this time of year, you know, help somebody out, whether it's, you know, financially or just helping with time or just, you know, kind of giving someone a call and making sure they're okay. So, you know, we will, we'll look for something new in 2021 to sort of get behind as a community. But, with that, you know, that's kind of our podcast business for 2020. We're going to wrap up here the first part of the show, first segment of the show. We're going to take a break real quick. You know, our good sponsors will hit you up for just a second, and we'll be back to talk about kind of a lot of new news for Cloudcast in 2021, as well as all of the trends and our predictions for 2021. Today's show is sponsored by Datadog. Start monitoring EC2, RDS, ECS, and all your other AWS services in minutes with Datadog. Whether you have 10 instances or 10,000, Datadog automatically tracks hosts as you scale, visualize metrics, automatically alert on anomalies, and collaborate across teams to quickly troubleshoot issues before they escalate. Give it a try with a free 14-day trial by visiting datadog.com/cloudcast, and Datadog will send you a comfy, complimentary t-shirt. That's datadog.com/cloudcast. Today's show is sponsored by Cloud Academy. Listen up, y'all. This is a great offer. With everyone using the same cloud platforms, winning and losing comes down to having the best talent to build products better and faster. Cloud Academy is the training platform of choice for Fortune 500 companies and thousands of tech professionals around the world. Thousands of video courses, learning paths, practical hands-on labs in real-world cloud environments, Cloud Academy has tools designed to help teams assess, build, and validate critical cloud skills. Most importantly, Cloud Academy stays agile, challenging you with new content, labs, and tons of features that ensure your skills stay relevant and everyone can level up. They cover everything from cloud certifications to DevOps to security to programming languages. You can get started now at cloudacademy.com. For a limited time, Cloudcast listeners can lock in 50% off the monthly price for life. Just put in the coupon code CLOUDCAST at checkout. It's a great way to pursue certifications or just build cloud expertise. Again, that's cloudacademy.com and use the coupon code CLOUDCAST to lock in 50% off the monthly price. And we're back. Aaron, it is time to look ahead to 2021. What sort of, you know, so before we dive into that, we've now done this show for 10 years. Amazing that we've gone for 10 years. We started off as literally, you know, the original Massive Cloudcast studio was a small like broom closet over at a Cisco building in Raleigh, and we've since expanded out of that.
But, which is not there anymore.
Not by yeah, the way. Not yeah. Right, exactly. We've done the show for 10 years. Next year will be our 11th year, still going strong. What are some of the changes we're making in 2021? Because we definitely have enjoyed it, but we feel like there's some new areas we can explore.
Yeah, and this is just part of a larger theme of we've changed it up over the years, and we've changed up the format a number of times over the years, and we try and iterate, and we try and keep the good and you know, get rid of the bad, right? And so we are going to be doing our look ahead into 2021. Those shows that we did in January of last year, we're going to do some of those again in January of this year, and really try and capture some of the trends and get on some folks that are, you know, smarter than us and can talk about some various industries and what we think will be hot topics to look at in 2021. That'll be the first one. And then we'll still be doing, you know, our normal weekly shows, but starting in February, we're going to be doing something maybe a slightly different as well. Do you want to take them through that, Brian?
Yeah. So, you know, the regular show will still be out every Wednesday. I know, you know, we're always trying to make sure that we find a good day of the week that's not massively overcrowded with lots of other ones, because we know you listen to other shows as well. So the regular show, the ones that, you know, typically has our interview, will be on Wednesday. I'm going to start doing a show that'll come out on Sundays as well. So, you know, one of the things that feedback that we get from people is, you know, the Wednesday, the interview show is great, but, you know, sometimes it's restricted by time. You want a little more context around a given topic. So we're going to probably typically do about a 15-minute show that'll drop on Sundays, kind of give you some context for that topic or that trend in the industry. So, you know, you'll have, if you, you know, subscribe to the exact same feed, you won't have to do anything different. There will be a show on Sundays as well as a show on Wednesdays as well. So, you know, hopefully the combination of those two will, you know, not only keep you up to date on what's new and cool and smart people, but also add a little more context as well. And then we got one other big thing that we're going to be launching in 2021, which we said we were going to do in 2020, and we got a little bit busy. So what's the new thing for 2021?
Yeah, so what we're going to be doing, and we've talked about it previously in the show, but then I admit, you know, the year was what it was, and we kind of went dark on it for a little bit, but we've resurrected it, and that is Cloudcast Basics. And what that is going to be is for those out there that are, excuse me, new into this market, right? If you're listening to this, this is designed for you to share with your friends, maybe share with your boss, somebody who doesn't know where to jump in. You know, after 10 years and close to 500 episodes, you know, some of the feedback we've received is that the barrier to entry is at times a little high. And so what we want to do is, the original idea behind this podcast was, let's go learn and share. Well, we want to make sure there's all audiences out there that are represented in that. And so those that want to just get started, that's what this is designed for.
Yeah. So, you know, they're going to be a little different format. They will be shorter. They'll be, you know, in the 10, 12 minute range. They'll be kind of basic. So for a lot of this audience, the folks that tune into Cloudcast every week, the real hardcore listeners, you know, these may be well below what you expect from a cloud computing show. But we have gotten a lot of feedback from people that just said, you know, I want to get started, but I don't know where to jump in. We're going to do two things. They're going to be, you know, 10 to 12 minutes, and we're going to do them as seasons. So we're going to kind of pick a topic, pick a theme. We're going to do about 8 shows per season, and they'll be a little more sort of Netflix style. You'll be able to binge through them. And again, you know, we want you to tell your friends about them, tell your boss, tell a colleague who, you know, maybe is an expert on the app dev side of things that wants to learn a little bit about infrastructure, or wants to, you know, is on the security side, wants to learn a little bit more about some other topic. It'll be a good way for them to kind of start to dive in. And then we expect over time, as they get comfortable, you know, kind of come into the deep end and come, you know, be part of the regular Cloudcast feed. So the one thing to note is this will not be part of the regular Cloudcast feed. There will be a Cloudcast Basics. You'll be able to get it through all the exact same channels that you do get your other podcasts. So by the time this show goes out, or at least within a couple of days, you'll be able to search for it. We'll at least have the teaser first one out there, and you'll be able to subscribe to it. And again, you know, hopefully you tell your friends. We're looking to kind of grow the Cloudcast community, but we also want to be able to bring new people in a pretty structured way. So hopefully, you know, if you get a chance to listen, tell your friends about it, give it a high rating on iTunes and other places, and, you know, it'll help spread the knowledge. Cool. Well, listen, those are the big things coming. Let's talk about what happened in 2020 and put some context around it, because I know everybody got blasted by news, you know, all the time. Where do you want to start? What's a good place to start in 2020? What's a topic we could talk about?
Well, I mean, we have to start with, if we're going to talk about 2020 and kind of the year that was, right, we got to start with COVID. And COVID really kind of sending everyone home, and it becoming, you know, it's the running joke in our industry is, you know, is it the year of VDI? The answer is no. 2020 was the year of VDI. It was the year of desktop as a service. It was the year of working from home and not traveling and not getting on planes. And it really, really impacted a lot of folks. And I'll say this, though, both positively and negatively. You know, take, for instance, a lot of folks, you know, if we worked for tech companies, maybe, you know, we were remote, right? And if you're working remote, sometimes you'd have to like, oh, that meeting invite didn't have the, you know, the audio bridge on it, or it became a great equalizer when everyone was working from home. And I think a lot of folks learned for the first time how to work remotely. So far and away the big trend. And, you know, obviously Zoom became really, really big. Slack became really big. And, you know, these tools, these collaborative tools to connect everyone was certainly a trend. And I think everyone, you know, if you didn't have that culture already, you developed it really, really fast.
Yeah, that, I mean, more than anything, COVID overwhelmed everything. I think it's going to be really interesting. I think a trend we'll have to watch is, you know, does COVID create sort of a winners and losers, or, you know, investors and sort of, you know, conservative thing out of this, where you know, I know from talking to a lot of different companies, there were some that looked at this and they said, you know, this is more than any other thing that's happened to our business. This has been the thing that's driving digital transformation. So they were investing ahead of it. And then there were plenty of companies, unfortunately, who were just so impacted by this that they said, look, the only thing I can do is cut costs. And it'll be really interesting to watch the next couple of years as to how much, you know, this 1 year is going to create a gap between those who were able to invest and those who, you know, had to cut cost, and maybe some other competitors come into their market as a byproduct of that, right? Like we saw things like this in 2008, and it'll be interesting to watch it in, you know, maybe part of 2021 and then into 2022 as well.
Yeah. And another trend to think about with all of this too is, what happens to offices, right? Like a few pretty prominent companies have already said, hey, we may never go back to the office, right? Now, don't get me wrong. I think like what's probably going to happen, because, you know, for those that don't know, I do tend to cover this in my day job these days. I think there's going to be, the pendulum has swung really, really hard towards remote work. It's probably going to swing back the other way when, you know, folks are just sick of being at home and they want to go back into the office. And so the pendulum has swung one way. It's going to swing back the other way. And then there's going to be some kind of new normal. I don't think it goes back to the way it was. Yep. I think it definitely, you know, for those of us that have worked from home for a long time now, and we've always struggled a little bit with that, you being the outsider looking in at that culture sometimes. Well, everyone understands that now. So it did probably reset some things. But, you know, are folks going to drastically change the way, to your point of cutting costs, right? Is office space something that maybe has cut costs in the larger term? Don't know. Yep. Right. Yep. And we'll see.
Yeah, another thing that's a big cost is travel. And, you know, in our industry, travel means conferences. It means getting out and seeing, you know, other people in the industry, learning about what's going on. Every single conference went virtual, right? And, you know, I know for me personally, you know, Red Hat, our conference was in May. We basically went virtual. We were probably the first company that really went all virtual. We did about 4 days, which is what we did before. It was tough. You know, it was tough. We got some good feedback from users, but I know over the year, just massive fatigue of like, oh yeah, here's the next conference. And then, you know, you had people like Google doing 9 weeks and AWS doing 3 weeks. And I mean, let me ask this without sort of making any comment on anybody else's conference. Like, did you get a chance to watch other ones, and did you find any of them that were good, or, you know, kind of good takeaways from doing virtual, or, you know, are we just going to be stuck in this, you know, kind of new way of doing it, but we all just hate the conferences now?
Well, so there's, oh gosh, there's so many facets to this, right? So there's the, first of all, there's the in-person experience. For me personally, like, I liked watching the show floor. I liked being present in the keynotes. Like, we're all kind of distracted with our laptops or our phones or whatever, but you would be in that room focused for, you know, a couple hours, paying attention. You'd get all the big announcements. You get the dump of like the, where they're headed and, you know, the messaging frameworks and all of these other things that are valuable for big things like that. Like, and I did attend a number of virtual events of others in the industry, but especially the ones that were spread out. Well, it was almost like you lost focus. You didn't know where to pay attention to. And so, you know, especially the big ones spread out over weeks, I didn't really absorb anything from them, to be very honest. And then those, some tried to create the, let's have a platform that sort of semi creates that experience of like, you have a keynote and you have breakout sessions and you have labs and you have this and you have that. And it just wasn't the same. Like, I really feel like there wasn't a good platform or format that came out of this. And then on the flip side of that, you know, those conferences are really expensive. Like, if you're a vendor with a booth and, you know, staffing that booth and all of the things that goes with these large presence at these events, you know, was it worth it? Was it worth it in person? Was it worth it as a virtual thing? What does it turn into going forward? Who knows? I don't know that I could predict that, because I definitely saw both good and bad this year.
Yeah. And I think, you know, more than anything, you know, it's going to, you know, hopefully two things happen. I think, you know, for a lot of companies, you know, they were in, you know, kind of panic mode. You know, how do we do this? How do we do it well? You know, unfortunately, there was not any, like you said, there's not a good platform for doing this, right? The ones that we used were difficult to use. You know, watching other people's were difficult. I mean, you had silly things happen, like it's an all virtual conference, but we're restricting the number of people that can watch, you know, a breakout session. And you're like, why would you do that? Or we're only having one breakout session. Why would you do that when you can record stuff? Like, so I'm hoping somebody gets really creative and there becomes essentially the Zoom of, you know, conference platforms, because we need it. And, you know, I think the other thing we're going to find is, you know, people are going to do their keynotes at the time that they do them of the year, because, you know, every company kind of gets a slot in the calendar. And then I think we're going to find that, you know, why would I restrict myself to that week to do the technical breakouts when I can teach my communities, teach my audiences the things that, you know, technical people need for certifications? Like, I should be able to do that all year long, right? I should be able to do that in new creative ways. I should be able to do that on a more global scale. So yeah, those are going to be really interesting things to watch, because I know, you know, they are a part of our industry, whether you love them or you hate them or you're somewhere in between. You know, they're going to have to be different, because people aren't going to travel nearly as much. They're not going to have as much budget. Let's get to some other stuff that, you know, is interesting. You know, it's kind of cloud specific, not COVID specific. You know, we learned one thing, which was, you know, while more and more people are moving to the public cloud, and part of that's because we couldn't get into our data centers or you didn't go, we learned, you know, right around the pandemic when it started, I think it was April or May, the cloud is not infinite, right? We learned that, you know, like AWS had some struggles and the man
behind the curtain, or the person behind the curtain, got exposed, right? If it's all a big capacity planning long game.
Well, and you sort of learned that the thing that we talk about a lot, which is, you know, how much did company X invest, you know, this quarter or this year in data centers and CapEx, which, you know, sometimes might seem like a really boring thing, you know, when the growth is so much, or at least in certain periods of time, those things matter, right? And you know, it's the thing we've said for a long time, which is, it will be really, really hard for anybody new to disrupt the big 3, 4, 5, 6 cloud providers, because You can't do it unless you have another cash cow business that also happens to need massive investment in infrastructure and other things like that, right? So it's tough to be a DataDog or a DigitalOcean or somebody else, to compete against Amazon and their logistics and Google with YouTube and, you know, Microsoft with Office 365 and other things behind the scenes. Like, you know, those trends sort of hit a brick wall this year, at least in terms of reality.
Yeah, and it goes back to, you know, Simon Wardley put it very well years ago on the podcast. Back in the, you know, the OpenStack days of, you know, he predicted all, you know, way back then of, you know, no one was ever going to really break out because of exactly this, right? Like it takes billions to even stay alive in this game, and it's, you know, billions in infrastructure, and then you got to get a return on that investment, and, you know, who has the liquidity to keep moving that behemoth forward? And the winners were already picked back then,
right?
I mean, they really were. I mean, you know, we've been pointing at the same companies for a while now. It's just the numbers just keep getting bigger.
Yeah. And you know, if we look at those numbers, you know, we're going to close 2020. AWS is now a $46 billion business. Can you remember, you know, there was a time during the tenure of this show when it wasn't big enough to actually show up on the balance sheet, right? It was in the other category. And we were trying to figure out if it would ever get to $1 billion. Like that was the first few years of this show. You know, it's now up to a $46 billion business, growing still at about 30% year over year. That's a big thing. That's a big ship.
Yeah. Well, and there's a combination too, right? Like there is the, what it was back in the day, right? Like one of the first reinvents I went to, like, you know, there, you could name this a lot of the services on, you know, maybe both hands. But now it's like, look at all the services too. So you also have this ecosystem that grew up as well as the size of core services. So you had this just fantastic land and expand business. AWS, you know, did that arguably better than anybody in the industry.
Yeah. And just to put the rest of the numbers in perspective, Azure is going to end around 30-ish billion. Azure's the one that still doesn't officially break out their numbers completely. They put them into intelligent cloud, which can mean different things. GCP is going to end the year in the 12-ish to $13 billion range. Alibaba is in that $6 to $8 billion range, AliCloud. You know, so, you know, there's a gap. I mean, there's definitely a gap between even one and two, but there's a huge gap between, you know, the first two and, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So, yeah, that's really, really interesting. You know, coming back a little bit to some of the things that were a little COVID related that every single one of us dealt with, did you have a favorite video conference service? I mean, I know that in my life, I used probably every one of them at least every week. Did you have a favorite one, or do you have a bias towards them?
I use Zoom the most. You know, I feel like I used a lot of them, but Zoom was the one I used the most. And to kind of combine both Zoom and, you know, not traveling anymore, you know, traveling for, you know, a number of years now took a lot of pictures, right? It took a lot of pictures from all over the world. So what I actually did was turned mine into virtual backgrounds, and every week was a different virtual background. And it actually became like an icebreaker conversational piece. I didn't intend for it to be, but it was one of those of like people like, oh, where's your background at this week? And it's, you know, so it was fun to do that. I also developed one heck of a video studio. Like we always kind of had the audio thing going here, and you know, we've got decent mics and acoustic panels and a lot of these other things, but this was the year of like, I have not one but two green screens, and I've got lighting, and I've got all these other things. And so you know, turning into not just Zoom you know, on the regular camera, but you know, decent quality video production as well this year.
Yeah. Did the same thing. And yeah, it was amazing how many preview meetings we had to do, and how many check, you know, kind of tech check meetings and all sorts of stuff because of that. So yeah, I think Zoom, ended up using Google Meet probably more than anything else, just because of what you use internally. The one really cool feature I found in Zoom was, and I saw this towards the end of the year, they had a like built-in translation thing. So I had a couple of meetings, one with Japan, one with a broader sort of
Asian. Google.
Sorry, no, I use Google the most. Google was okay. But Zoom had this one really cool feature, which was kind of language translation, which I thought was really cool. And I was thinking about it on a walk this morning. I was taking the dog for a walk, and I thought, what would be the killer feature for one of these things? And the one that dawned on me was, you know, none of them have this idea of like, I mean, they all have the idea of like, I can record the call and somebody will send it out. But, you know, if you're like most people, like we get double booked and triple booked into meetings, and you kind of need to be in both of them. I mean, just sometimes just to listen or to whatever. It would be nice to have sort of virtual you there, right? You know, they know that it's virtual you. You're not going to respond to anything. But not only do you get the recording of it, but it goes through, it transcribes it. It pulls out certain key things, whether it's an action item or like certain keywords. Like I need a way to be double and triple booked, but have a presence in those things and have the system go, hey, you need to pay attention to this 5-minute segment because it's important. It hit these 10, you know, three, whatever keywords that you care about. And there was a, you know, and like you understand why an action item got taken. So like that's my request to all of the ones that are out there is figure out a way to help me be, you know, deal with being double and triple booked.
It's like the sports highlights version.
I need
the red zone coverage.
Exactly. I need the red zone coverage, or I need the ESPN coverage. Actually, ESPN. Yeah, I need the red zone coverage. That's exactly it. Let's get back to some of the trends. What did you see in terms of like open source companies? Right, I obviously work for an open source company, but like, were there any trends in open source that were sort of interesting to you this year?
Yeah, I think what's interesting, and then you know we can extrapolate this out even further into potentially new business model, right? A lot of the open source companies, they've been growing into cloud and managed businesses, right? You look at MongoDB, you look at Confluent, you look at Redis Labs, you know, Red Hat, et cetera. For the longest time, it was like, hey, everyone was like, oh, when is there going to be another Red Hat? Well, I mean, Red Hat was, you know, the license model and the service and support model, but we really are moving into more of a, as a service. Everything is managed in the cloud, control planes in the cloud. And, you know, it is more, I'll use the term, it's the AWS operations model, right? Because AWS was very successful at doing a lot of this and then charging per user, per minute, you know, this more metered things. And so it was a very different model. And so honestly, we were always like, hey, when is there going to be another Red Hat in open source? They may not be, right? We may just skip that and go straight to, hey, what's, you know, all of these companies, it's, you know, the economies of, hey, I want to open source, but I don't want to necessarily do a lot of the heavy lifting and management of it.
Yeah. So essentially you go from, you know, competing against free, you know, right? So you had upstream open source community. If you became a commercial entity that was the best at that thing, you competed against your own community, right? You competed against free. And now you're competing against the public cloud providers taking that upstream piece of software that people seem to like and use and competing against them managing it versus you, the commercial company, having a managed version of that. And, you know, on the surface, you might say, well, gosh, if you have to compete against AWS, you can't be successful. You know, but you look at, you know, MongoDB is doing incredibly well. And like you said, Confluent and Redis and, you know, Red Hat's been doing more with it. Like there are opportunities to build that, you know, sort of enterprise version of it, the differentiated version. Some of them are becoming kind of native services in the cloud, right? Like I know the thing I work on with OpenShift is now a native service in AWS and Azure. You know, you look at some of these other ones that just become, you know, automatically auto scale across the different clouds. And so, yeah, there's definitely a new business model emerging, and it's not the when will the next Red Hat come along.
Well, and I'll add this too. So, you know, there's always a flip side to all of this. If you're a vendor in this space, you now have an entirely new set of challenges, right? Before it was all about, hey, how do I convert over the free version into paying customers in some way, shape, or form, whether it was like a, you know, an open core model or whether it was a support model. But now it's, you have to own and operate and be a provider, and you've got operations and you've got back end and you've got support and you've got all of these other things that you didn't necessarily have before. And you have an entirely new, like, hey, you got to keep the customer happy, right? If they're paying on a much smaller per, you know, metered per hour, per minute, per day kind of mentality, well, they could leave.
Right. Right.
And so it really does, when you step back and think about it's at the end of the day, it's all open source, right? But it's open source in and consumed in an entirely different model.
Yeah. Well, and I think that leads into this other trend that we saw this year. And you know, not every trend that we talk about is massive. Some of them are still early data points, but you know, we saw some companies that, you know, are doing either brand new or doing really successful that are, you know, cloud only. And I know by that, I don't mean like, hey, we're a SaaS only offering like Salesforce or something. But I mean like something that you would have traditionally thought of as, you know, core IT types of services, like a Snowflake, you know, massive IPO, is growing incredibly well, but is only a cloud service, right? Like they've come out and said, we're never going to be on premises. You know, you see other companies like this, Tecton, which is a, you know, an AI company we had on the show, Observe, which is Jeremy Burton's, you know, new observability company. And then you see companies like Atlassian who are now saying, we're actually going to move from having an on-premise offering only into cloud, right? And that's going to take 3 or 4 years or 5 years or whatever. But like, it will be very interesting to see, you know, do we see more of these hybrid things? And we're going to get into hybrid in a little bit. Or do we see these sort of cloud only things and really, really different business models, like hard to sort of compare them apples to apples.
Yeah. And I'll just add to this. I mean, to your point, super early in on this, but I mean, it's just I think all companies will naturally move to this either cloud only or as a service offerings. And these days of, you know, kind of releasing software that is either annually licensed or perpetually licensed, I mean, it's just gone. Yeah. I shouldn't say gone. It's going away.
Right.
And the direction will be, you know, hybrid is probably a stepping stone, if you will. And there's always going to be on-prem. There's always going to be, you know, verticals. There's always going to be certain areas where, you know, everything's going to play. It's a new tool in the toolbox, if you will.
Yep. Yep. So we've talked a lot about software. We've talked a lot about sort of software offerings and software moving up the stack. You know, the other big news of the year, or at least it felt like sort of a revival or a 2.0 sort of news, was ARM chips, right? So we've talked for a long time about ARM chips being, you know, a thing in mobile devices, right? It's the reason we have Google phones and Apple phones and all that sort of stuff. They're cheaper, they you know, power is better and they're lighter and all that sort of stuff. ARM made a really big push in two new areas, you know, in the cloud, right? So we saw huge announcements around ARM, you know, in the data center being 40% cheaper, you know, 50% faster, you know, huge sort of big jumps. And now we're starting to see it like in desktops and laptops and stuff like that. So thoughts on ARM? I know we don't necessarily cover hardware all that much, but boy, ARM made a big push this year.
Yeah. And ARM is super fascinating because obviously now there was a time, you know, Intel was the only game in town. And then, you know, if you go back even earlier, there, you know, it was the AMD versus Intel days. And now we're coming up on where, you know, like you look at also a larger trend, NVIDIA, right? NVIDIA bought ARM.
Yep.
NVIDIA bought Cumulus, NVIDIA bought SwiftStack, right? You can't really call them a you know, 3D chip company anymore.
Right, they're not just the GPU company anymore, right?
Right, exactly. And so it's really interesting to see the larger thing of what is NVIDIA going to do when they stitch all these pieces together?
Right, right. Yeah, it makes you wonder, like, does NVIDIA become the new Intel, or does NVIDIA essentially become the new Dell / you know, HP / Cisco / whatever, right? Like, you know, we always see these sort of shifts from, you know, does it become the commercial thing, or do we care about the commercial thing that's just the way to consume it? So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what NVIDIA does with ARM. But yeah, it's forever we were like, well, it probably won't ever shift to the data center because those things are big honking, you know, compute centric things. And then all of a sudden it was like, nope, they're just way faster and way cheaper. And it was like, oh, okay, well, cool, we're all in an ARM. So that shifted pretty quickly over the last couple of years. You know, there was a little thing that happened before Thanksgiving that didn't. It sort of got some news, and then it kind of got lost in Thanksgiving. AWS had a massive outage. And I only bring this up because, you know, the cloud providers have outages. Google had an outage, you know, maybe a week or two ago that, you know, impacted a whole bunch of services. I know, like, my kids couldn't log into their, you know, school meetings first thing in the morning. But, like, to me, one of the things that was really interesting about these outages is not, you know, we no longer go, oh, the cloud's not reliable. But what you realize once you read these postmortems is we really don't know how the cloud works. Like, we don't know how intertangled all of the services are behind the scenes. You know, like, EC2 wasn't available, but it was because, you know, Kinesis wasn't available, which ties into API Gateway, which ties into something else, which ties into, and you start realizing, like, are we ever going to learn how the cloud works behind the scenes? Are we always just going to be like, well, you should have known better. You should have designed better. But, like, how do you design better when you don't know what things are interconnected to each other?
Yeah. And it's such a good point about the Kinesis thing, because it was something as simple as that. I mean, all they did is they did a storage upgrade. They added more capacity, but the more capacity kind of overloaded the front ends of the system. And to think, like, to something as simple as that created this domino effect that stretched out like it did. And the Google one, you know, at the end of the day, it wasn't the Google services per se, you know, like the end user services you would interact with. It was the authentication service, right? And of course, that's going to be the critical crown jewel. So if you can't log in or you can't authenticate, no one knows if you have access to the apps. No one has if you have access to the data. So everything goes down, right? And so that morning, yeah, you know, my daughter was like, hey, I don't have to go to school. And I was a little bit like, hey, I don't have to work because I can't freaking do anything without Google either. But then it went back up in an hour and everything was off and running. But
right.
Yeah, and it was everyone's freaking out. I can't get to this. I can't get to that. And no one knows when they're going to come back. And so it is interesting in these postmortems how they lead to it, what they will learn from it. But then to your point, how do you prevent it? Well, or even can you anymore?
Right.
Like, even if you go across availability zones and you do some of these best practices, who knows?
Yeah. And I think the real thing is, you know, there's always two reactions, right? There's the, you know, the ones who go, oh, well, see, you should know better. This, you know, there's the kind of, you know, you should know better. And then there's the, well, it's not their own fault. It's your fault. You should have designed for all these sort of chaos monkey and high availability and stuff. And to a certain extent, there's going to be a lot of companies who are like, I just picked the default and I can't afford to be Netflix, right? And you sort of wonder, like, okay, are you just kind of SOL? And, you know, hopefully there aren't very many of those outages. Because, yeah, if you're running Netflix, cool, you can, you know, design across availability zones and have CDNs and run chaos engineering and all this stuff. But, like, can everybody afford that? Probably not. You know, like, there's a gap there between the haves and the have-nots. But anyways, let's move on to something. Aaron, I have a secret that I'm just going to keep between you and me. Hopefully nobody else is listening, but I'm going to keep this between you and me. Hybrid cloud's now officially a thing. I don't know if you knew this, but, like, you know, for the last 10 years, it's not been a thing, but now it's officially a thing.
Yeah. And they've admitted it, right? AWS, Azure, and GCP, you know, they all have offerings now, right? We've all got on-prem solutions. They actually will use the words, right? Like, I spoke at AWS reInvent when I was with Citrix back in the day, and the censored words, if you will, was a pretty long list, right? And so it's cloud, interesting to
hybrid
see.
Hybrid cloud, multi-cloud, don't say those things. They're not real. They don't exist.
Right. And not to just pick out AWS, right? Like, there's always some messaging and frameworks you have to adhere to when you deal with these. But I will say this, right? Like, you know, there's some traditional vendors as well. Everyone's taking advantage of this hybrid cloud trend who, you know, a couple of years ago, I think we all would kind of, like, laugh at all of this. But, you know, if you take all of the trends we just talked about, I think they all culminate in this. Well, you're always going to have a certain amount of on-prem. You're always going to have a certain amount of public cloud. And for a while there, it was like, well, you know, you've got these things you tend to over here and these things you tend to over there. And it's not necessarily the case anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the other thing, and this is the other secret that you and I keep, you know, just for ourselves on this show is, you know, if you have to deal with people's enterprise on-prem stuff, it's ugly as hell. It won't neatly conform to whatever slides you have. So, for anybody who's going to be moving on premises or doing stuff in other environments that you think, you know, will only work like the way that you think they will. Yeah, that doesn't work like that. By the way, those people that run those data centers or whatever, they're not super motivated to just change because you told them to.
Right. Exactly. And it's, you know, this is what, and I still follow this space decently close. And I'm still waiting for a lot of the implementation details of all of this to work out. And the reason why I say that is because there's a horror story. I will, even though the company isn't around anymore, I'm not going to name the company, but there was a company that was extremely hardware prescriptive in their hybrid cloud model. Oh gosh, 6-7 years ago at this point. So very early on. And it was like, well, you take it out of the box, you put it in the rack, you plug it in, you plug in your networking, and then you turn it on and you go. Well, it turns out you turn it on and you go only is like, well, if you had exactly these VLANs and you didn't have these other kind of VLANs and you had this kind of traffic enabled and you didn't have this other, like, it was so like it worked in these very perfect conditions. Like you could tell it was like, well, yeah, if you had nothing else and we're starting new, this would be awesome.
Right.
No one's data center is like that.
yep. You will
they failed and they're not around. Right.
You will use our DNS. You will use RIAM. You will use maybe not so much. Maybe the firewall won't be exactly where you want it to be. It'll be be a little different. So, well, cool. Listen, we've covered a lot of the trends. I think we kind of went sequentially through the year. The one that we did not cover because we freely admit that we're not super security centric people. We do like to have security shows, but we don't necessarily know enough about security and we know better than to talk about it was this SolarWinds hack, which is sort of, you know, people are calling it a kind of a software supply chain hack amongst a lot of other things. Why don't we dive into predictions? Because I know both of us, you know, had a little bit of a prediction that ties to the SolarWinds hack. Why don't we just start with that one? Because it ended the year in terms of tech, but also is going to have ramifications going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So my portion of this is, you know, 2021 will be a year of security. And what I mean by that is above and beyond just supply chain hacks, but this idea of zero trust models that are really starting to develop and they'll be the norm, right? I don't think we have hit rock bottom with SolarWinds yet. I still think there is more that is going to come out of this. And you combine that with some trends that we're starting to see of ransomware, especially targeted into certain verticals like healthcare and government here in the States and in Europe as well. And so, you know, this era of protect the perimeter, maybe using some VLANs to segment off, like that's all old school architecture. This point, we are going to have to move to something new because the hack could be from the inside, just like the supply chain hack. So yeah, I'll flip it over to you for the kind of the rest of your portion of it.
Yeah, and I stole this from a couple of folks. I think Simon Crosby, who is one of our security friends and security experts, you know, started Bromium and a lot of stuff, and Christian Riley, who I think maybe was a first guest on our show, former CTO at Citrix, said, you know, this is going to be a year when, whether you like it or not, there are going to be so many conference talks and startups and stuff that are going to be around this thing called BuildSecOps, right? Basically, you know, software supply chain stuff that you should have done for a long time, whether it's, you know, signing things or using, you know, hardware security modules or, you know, whatever else it is, you're just going to hear about this over and over again because this thing is widespread. It's, you know, it follows, requires enough best practices that people often forget about them. But yeah, look out for BuildSecOps being a buzzword that you hear quite a bit in 2021. Yep. You know, we don't typically get into a lot of, I mean, like we mentioned at the beginning, a lot of our guests do get acquired, which is great. Do you want to make any predictions about anybody getting acquired or, you know, trends getting acquired this next year that you think might happen?
Yeah, I'll make one. And it really builds on from last year, I did a prediction around GitLab. I think GitLab gets gobbled up this year. I'm not willing to necessarily predict by who, But they have, you know, if you go look at their funding, they've taken a lot of funding. They've done really well. They're up to, if I remember correctly, an E round, and you know, they've got a multi-billion dollar valuation, very much like HashiCorp. You know, very similar profiles in that, you know, really found a space, really found product market fit, and is doing extremely well. But I also wonder, do they have true escape velocity? So I'm going to predict that they'll get gobbled up by somebody, but don't get me wrong, not fire sale. They'll get gobbled up at a very premium value.
All right. So gets got, and that's the headline. Yeah, that'll be an interesting one. I think both Hashi and GitLab are interesting because, like you said, you know, big valuations continue to take VC funding, and they're right at that level where, you know, the number of companies that could acquire them is pretty small, right? I mean, I think Hashi had about a $4 billion valuation. Git had like a $6 billion valuation. So you figure you got to add a premium on top of that. You know, they're going to be facing the challenge of, you know, does an IPO just become their next funding round? And then, you know, that buys them more time, or, you know, does somebody make another, you know, GitHub type of purchase? Because you're, you know, you're going to be talking about, I think GitHub went for $7.5 billion. So you're going to be talking about a pretty big, you know, number for somebody who's got to be able to, you know, probably turn it into a, like we said, a cloud centric business, and then, you know, be able to monetize it. So yeah, it's an interesting one. It's a, you know, people seem to love GitLab that use GitLab, and same with HashiCorp, but, yeah, it's tough. It's, you know, they sort of fall into that Docker category of, you know, you got really popular and you got huge valuations, but how do you exit the plane, or how do you keep flying the plane? So, I'm going to throw one out, that I think Zoom gets acquired. I think we looked it up. I think Zoom's valuation is now $120 billion. And I should.
It's insane.
It's insane. I should go back and look. The thing I meant to look up before we did the show was, how much did Cisco acquire WebEx for way back in the day? And I want to say it was in the, I'm going to guess, because I think I was at Cisco at the time, like, it might have been a couple of billion dollars. It might have been $1 billion. And then apparently the whole, you know, foundation or creation story of Zoom was, you know, the guy who started Zoom had been at WebEx and wanted to do this, you know, kind of next generation. And Cisco said, nah, we're good. But I don't know how those guys continue at that valuation. You know, obviously we're going to go back to some sort of normalcy where everything's not on Zoom. And maybe it's somebody like Google who looks at it as, you know, we need to boost our productivity. I mean, the crazy thing is, like, Slack just got acquired for what, $30 billion or something, $28 billion. You know, is Zoom worth five times as much, six times as much as Slack? I don't know. Google has a lot of money. Meet's not really a great product, but I mean, if it's going to come down to competing between, you know, Microsoft and Teams and Salesforce and Slack, like, you know, Google is the next one that's in that productivity space. Maybe they make a big thing and they figure out some interesting, cool, enterprise-y sort of features they can drive in there, since they're, you know, committed to their cloud becoming, you know, much bigger than it is. So that's my sort of bold one. I don't know that it's super bold, but you know, their valuation is way, way, way out of whack.
Yeah, and I'll add to that too. Like, the reason why, in my mind, Google makes sense as honestly probably the only one maybe that would acquire them.
Yeah.
Because to your point, Microsoft has Teams. And it's fine. I mean, you know, like I said, I think we probably tried them all this year, right?
Microsoft Teams. It's fine.
It's fine.
it's a great tagline.
My review.
Yeah.
But you know, the Google stuff, it's always been, I wouldn't even say fine. It's always been just okay.
It's there. Yeah, it's there. It's a button you can push.
It works. It's always been. And so, like, I really do think, like, yeah, if there's one area that could really use amping up within the Google, you know, workspace ecosystem, yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, I think here's the thing. I'll handicap it this way. I think your prediction, even at the valuation that GitLab is probably less crazy of getting acquired than Zoom at their ridiculously crazy valuation. So I'm gonna give you the better betting odds on that one. Let's hit on one last prediction. Why don't you go first? We'll hit on one last prediction, and then we'll wrap this up because we've been going for a long time.
Yeah. So my last one, and again, kind of builds on last year a little bit. last year I talked about, you know, serverless and you know, this now, you know, functions as a service and really starting to get some traction. And I feel like we've made progress on that. And one of the big things I said was it really kind of needed a new name. And the new name really is more around this event-driven architecture, which is, I think, a much better name. And then you've had some stacks kind of develop out of this as well. You know, there's the Jamstack, and then our friends over at Trigger Mesh, they have the Smokestack as well. And so this helps this go from, like, in the crossing the chasm model, from this hobbyist, super, super early technologist only kind of area, which is I believe it was in, into more of this early majority status. And of course, you know, having somebody like AWS with Lambda behind it is, of course, increasing things. We're starting to see better tooling around all of this. We're starting to see better use cases around all of this. And I think that momentum will continue as kind of, again, I used it earlier, another tool in the toolbox, right? And I think this is starting to mature and it is starting to get legs. And it's going to be a decently valid architecture for certain application types going forward.
Yep. Yeah. No, it's definitely evolved from the it's just super cheap computing and you don't have to do anything to, you know, a pretty sophisticated stack. Like you said, Jamstack, Smokestack, event driven. Like, there are a lot of viable applications using this stuff and they're not using it just because, you know, Lambda is super cheap or something like that. Right. Like, it's the other thing that's been interesting is to watch Lambda evolve. Right. Lambda started off as like, we don't do containers. We're really small. We're really whatever. And now it's like Lambda can be up to, you know, 8 gig and it also can contain containers and a bunch of other stuff. So it sort of falls in the same category of, oh, you want to get really big? You're probably going to have to do enterprise-y features, and that will get you away from your original sort of perfectly pure architecture that you started with, because that's what people pay for. So,
yeah. And everyone always wants to start, you know, stateless.
Yeah.
Right? And then everyone always wants stateful.
Exactly.
Right? And so, you know, that was a big thing to solve as well.
Yeah. I'll end with one last one. It's not super interesting because it involves lawyers, and lawyers suck, and nobody wants to hear this, but a lot of buzz in the news about antitrust in our industry. So, you know, Google has a big antitrust thing coming up both in the US and I think still in Europe. Facebook has a big one. Everyone's talking about, you know, this may extend out to like Amazon and so forth. I think there will be a lot of noise. I don't think there will be anybody getting broken up per se. You know, the big one that everybody talks about is eventually will AWS have to get spun out of Amazon? I think that one's going to be, it'll come up at some point, maybe, but I think the other ones, you know, kind of have to go through the fire first. I don't think they're all so big that they can throw lawyers at this for a long, long time. So I think we'll hear a lot of noise. I don't think we'll see much happen that affects our industry in 2021 and probably not in 2022 either. So, well, listen, we've been going for a really long time. We kind of prep people up front. If anybody is still listening, thank you. but thank you to everybody who has listened for the whole year, who stuck with the show. We hopefully you are excited about what we're doing in 2021. We are, you know, very excited. The industry keeps growing, keeps new innovation comes along. So we've got lots and lots of stuff to cover. And like we said, if you know, get a chance and you're listening to this, go out, subscribe to Cloudcast Basics. And more importantly, you know, tell a friend about it. Tell a friend who, you know, isn't as in-depth as you. And let's see if we can kind of grow this community and bring some of those people along. So, Aaron, any last thoughts for 2021 before we wrap up and hopefully move into a much better year?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to say, again, final thank you to everyone. Thank you for listening, whether it's, you know, whether you've just joined us this year or you've been around since the beginning. Thank you very much for that. And please continue to give us feedback. Let us know how we can improve. We're always trying to change and evolve and keep this relevant for everyone that's out there. And again, thank you to our sponsors for making this possible as well.
Absolutely.
And looking forward to 2021.
Yeah, absolutely. So happy holidays, everybody. And we will look forward to seeing you. We will not be coming out the last week of the year, but we will have a new show in 2021. So not only will we see you next week, but we will see you next year.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.